You're listening to highlights from One Planet Podcast's interview with Esha Shabra, author of Working to Restore, Harnessing the Power of Business to Heal the Earth. This podcast is supported by the Jan Michalski Foundation.
The reason why I wrote this book, I had spent 15 years writing about mission-driven companies, and in the last 7-8 years, it really had been about environmental issues. And so I had started to see the patterns. You can start to tell the companies that are genuinely doing it versus the companies that are just talking about it. So regenerative started coming into the lexicon, the term, in 2017, 2018. And that was right when I was beginning to write this book. And it came from the world of agriculture. So regenerative agriculture was really where we were hearing this. And to regenerate means to bring life into something. To sustain means to keep the status quo. And regenerative looks at things from a very holistic lens. If you're going to run a regenerative farm, it's all the different components of the farm and the ecosystem ideally come within the ecosystem. Soil is a really interesting topic. It's not something that you typically want to discuss on front page headlines. We can look at it from the environmental lens. And I think we understand at this point that if you have richer soils, you have more resilient crops, and therefore you have a healthier farm in the long run, financially and environmentally. But I think it's actually interesting that it's the financial component. When I talk to a lot of these folks in agriculture, whether it's farmers or farm-based brands, they all have said that business-wise, it makes sense. In fact, I did a piece recently for one of the news outlets that looked at cattle ranchers across the U.S., and many of them transitioned to regenerative practices, not entirely because of the environmental benefits, but because for the bottom line also, it was much better for them. Because if you think about it, if you are working off of soils that are depleted, it's going to require more water. That's an irrigation issue. But also you're going to be more prone to all kinds of crop-related issues. It could be runoff during a storm. It could be weakened soils that result in weakened plants, so your crop is not as profitable. So there's different aspects to soil that allow you to create a healthier business. I think we're only beginning to scratch the surface on how soil health correlates to crop health. There's an organization in the U.S. called Mad Ag, which is now doing some research on also the nutrition levels in the food. When I was doing the book research, I was trying to find studies that look at how richer soils can result in more nutrient-dense foods, but there needs to be more research done on that front. So now there's an organization that's also looking at that, is that if you eat foods that are from richer soils, are they truly more nutrient-dense? And that is very important to the human population, because that's become a growing topic of discussion, is that even the fruits and vegetables we're eating, do they have the kind of nutrient density that they used to have 50 years ago? Perhaps not. And there's a variety of organizations working on that research, which I think is really fascinating. So the soil equation, it's important for carbon sequestration. It's important for the environmental story. It's important for farmers from an environmental lens, but it's also very important from a business lens, which ultimately is what encourages people to make some of these transitions. The other example in the soil chapter, which looks at California Safe Soil up in Northern California, how they were using leftover produce that was unwanted for a variety of reasons and turning it into fertilizer. They were very specific that we need to create a product that can go into the current farming system. If we ask a farmer to transition away and do this in a manner that he's not been doing, it's not going to work. So they made a product that goes into the drip lines and that's suitable for farmers today. That's how you're going to get adoption. It's very hard to change some of these things, whether you're looking at food or you're looking at manufacturing and apparel and things like that. These supply chains are huge and complex and global. And so whenever you're introducing something new, it's really important that it works for all the parties at play. You can't ask people to deviate too much for cost reasons, for behavioral reasons, for many reasons. Circular economy is, I think, a really interesting space, because reality is that these waste streams are an opportunity. They're a real opportunity for these companies to rethink how they can build a product out of it. So I love the story of Toast Ale from the UK, which is not in fashion, which is what you normally think of with circular economy. But Toast Ale is this company that was started by a food activist and by a social entrepreneur, two folks. And they really felt there's this real need to create a product with this waste. So in the UK, a lot of people love to grab a ready-to-eat sandwich that you can get at a Pret or one of these kind of corner sandwich shops. And the factories that were making the sandwiches, they had to get rid of the end slices on the loaves because nobody wants those kind of fat slices at the end. And you would think that's nothing. It's two pieces of bread, right? But then you multiply that times thousands of loaves and all of a sudden you have this huge waste. And Toast said, let's make beer out of it. Making beer out of bread is not, again, a new concept, but we had deviated from that. And so they put this whole model together where they're making beer out of leftover bread. And what I love about their company is, one, not only are they using a waste stream, but two, they're trying to make this concept of regenerative interesting and fun and engaging a new audience, because it can feel a bit preachy and didactic at times. And they were like, beer is something that everybody loves and can agree on. So now they're in cafes, they're in pubs, they're in, you know, grocery stores across the UK. And they've also decided to put a percentage of their proceeds, the majority of their profits, into food waste organizations. So the cycle continues. It continues even on the profit side. It's not even just the product itself, but it's the mindset that, okay, can we take the profits of this company and then nurture more food waste organizations and more food waste programs, which I thought was really lovely. The other examples are, how do we recycle our apparel much better? Part of the problem that is fundamental is that we finally realized that we're not actually recycling our stuff. I don't think the average person knew that. And it was really when this story went viral on different news platforms that, look, like 5-6% of what we throw in the recycle bin is actually ending up in a recycling unit. And the wildest part of it that most people don't realize is that a lot of it's being put on a ship and then being sent to Asia. And then when China said, no, we're not going to take any more of your trash to recycle, the US was in a real predicament where they said, what are we going to do with all this? We got to figure it out. And I think sometimes those market barriers also then push you to innovate, because then you have to figure out a solution. But yeah, the fact that recycling in itself is really complex and I would say quite broken still, that is also another incentive to try to figure out more circular business models. At the end of 2019, I started a tea company. It's called Alea Tea, and we do loose leaf tea and we do organic tea. But the packaging was a real headache. We didn't want to do glass because it's too difficult to ship. Aluminum has its own challenges. And the other option is plastic stand-up pouches. And you can get a lot of them that are made out of recycled plastics. But we decided to go down the compostable route. Now, even the supply chain of compostables is also very complex. And there's good compostables and there's some not so good. And it was a real experience to see what it's like for businesses when they're trying to figure out these solutions. You start to empathize and you really start to understand that this is not easy stuff to figure out, because yes, the materials can exist out there. And yes, there's innovations happening with seaweed and mushrooms and all these other things that you mentioned. But one, does it work for a business financially? So these are very complex problems to solve. I think the innovations are exciting. I do think the stuff that's happening in seaweed particularly is very interesting. But again, we have to look at it closely and see, is that a win for everybody? Or are we introducing possibly some new complexities in the marine ecosystems that we're harvesting and cultivating all this stuff? I actually am very inspired by India. There are so many companies these days that are looking at materials. That is a huge opportunity in India to help India transition away from some of these problematic materials into more natural materials, into more eco-friendly materials. But on the people front, it's a complex question to answer. So I'll give you one example. This was a company, it's not in the book, but I discovered it years ago, I think around 2010 when I was in India doing reporting. And it's called Jaipur Rugs. It's a very well-known now case study. I think there's been business schools that have done case studies on it. But there was a gentleman who decided that he was really interested in the rug kind of world. And he started spending time with weavers in Rajasthan. And these were weavers who lived in villages and would weave 6 hours a day and then also do other work. But they had very poor links to the market, so they couldn't get their products to the market, or they would end up selling them for very low prices. And he built this robust brand called Jaipur Rugs. Now it's thousands in their network just in Rajasthan. And now they're in Gujarat, they're in other states in India as well. And he created employment and job opportunities for people at the rural level, which I think goes back to that Gandhi philosophy of how do we keep people where they are in their villages and create opportunities for them where they do get paid well. They are given a voice. They are treated very well. And Jaipur Rug tries to do all of that. I'm sure they're not perfect, but they try to do a lot of that. I think we need more business models like that, because the reality is not everybody can go to the city and live in the city and work in the city. And the city has its own issues. I spent a lot of time also reporting on agriculture in the hills north of Delhi. It can get quite frustrating when you just hear about problem after problem in the world, right? And as a journalist, I'd always taken this approach of focusing on solutions ever since I started my career. I think in a way, the traditional journalism, as beautiful and as needed as it is to have a third party view on something where it's completely not biased, the reality is you can be a storyteller in today's world in so many ways. And I am inspired by some of these solutions that I'm beginning to see in different industries, because I think we are at an interesting point in time where people are very much so aware of these issues and they are trying to figure out solutions. The fundamental problem here, though, from what I saw and from what I reported, is that we have a challenge, which is that the nature of business has been focused on growth, which is opposite to this idea of circularity. Can you do growth and can you do circularity at the same time? I don't know if we've proven that yet, because a lot of the larger corporations are built on a model where they have to do this sort of trajectory of growth. It's always about maximizing profit. And that is inherently their model. That is what they are designed for. So can we encourage them to think about systems that are not going to be about the linear growth and instead about a circular model? For medium-sized businesses, especially companies that are privately owned, yes, you can do these things and at quite significant scale. But can Fortune 500 companies do all of this and still be responsible to those who have invested in them and get them the returns they need? I'm inspired by a lot of young people, a lot of people who are in their early 20s. They're very interested in these topics. They are actually really thinking about the environment. They love thrifting, for example, because not only is it trendy and cool and affordable, but it's also really good for the environment. I hope that they continue to fight for what is right and needed in today's world, is that we do create more equitable models, whether it's in business or elsewhere, and that we do have some kind of respect for the planet, because the reality is, if we don't, we're the ones that are going to suffer at the end of the day. It's only going to become harder for us, whether it's getting food to eat, whether it's having an environment that's comfortable and hospitable, whether it's having the supply chains we need for all the products in the world. I hope that there is a business model and a path forward. And I hope they're the trailblazers that sort of make it happen. And I see that happening around the world. When you look at regenerative agriculture in particular, for second generation farmers, or it could be third or fourth generation even, but when they see how their fathers and their grandfathers and their families have done it for eons, we need to encourage that. We need to create policies that also allow for some of this stuff to, you know, flourish. But I think policy is another part of this. There's so much opportunity. Yes, there's a lot of things that are wrong with the world, but don't get bogged down by it. Whatever path you choose, if you're in ag, help create the new business model for farmers. If you're in CPG, create products that really are regenerative to their core. There's a lot of opportunity. It really can be done, and it requires all of us to play a part in it. Otherwise, it's hard for the very few that try to go up that hill.
We hope you've enjoyed this program and listening to the highlights of this podcast. If you'd like to get involved in One Planet Podcast or learn more about environmental projects, click on the subscribe button. Thank you for listening.